sexual health look like? We like the WHO definition, if it ever gets approved. We like the CDC definition, if you can get that approved. But how does one measure this stuff? What does it look like across the landscape? And this has been a major focus both of work at CDC as well as with our CHAC Sexual Health Work Group. Jamie Looklider has really been instrumental in leading CDC's efforts to identify sources of information and pull this together, and will give us an update about where this effort stands. Jamie is a behavioral scientist in the Division of STD Prevention. She joined CDC in 1999. She's got really diverse and I think really impactful research interests, particularly the assessment of sexual behaviors and other factors associated with the transmission of STD and HIV. And so it's terrific to have Jamie join us this morning to address the topic of the status of sexual health in the U.S., CDC sexual health indicators.
Or?
Actually, this is the title.
Well, they probably write it, so it's okay, right? Yeah, so as John mentioned, this is just one small part of the overall sexual health initiative that CDC is focusing on. And Meg did a wonderful job of hitting all of these points in her presentation, but there were just a few things I wanted to highlight so you could see the framework that we started with when developing the indicators that we wanted to use. So I think we all know that adverse sexual health outcomes are relatively common and they're very costly. They place a large burden on our healthcare system. And efforts to address these adverse outcomes are often segmented. So she mentioned how it's very siloed. We typically focus on a single disease or a set of related diseases rather than looking at sexual health in a holistic manner. And we also tend to focus a lot on risk factors and reducing risk. So in response, CDC developed an initiative to consider a more positive approach to addressing sexual health. It's based on health promotion and wellness. And Meg took you through the four draft objectives that focus on sexual health across the lifespan. So our purpose was twofold. We wanted to identify a core set of indicators that would allow tracking of key sexual health domains in CDC's sexual health initiative, and we wanted these indicators to be at the individual level. And then we wanted to highlight the current state of sexual health in the U.S., so I'll have to bore you with some numbers today. So what we did was we had a pretty comprehensive compilation of known surveys and surveillance systems that had data at the national level and contained information on sexual health. And so we took that and we decided to narrow it down and focus on surveys that had a history of implementation and plans for future data collection, because we really want to monitor indicators across time, not just at this point in time. So we then matched the existing survey items to the domains in each of the four draft objectives for the CDC Sexual Health Initiative. And they're listed here, and I'll walk you through each one in greater detail in a few slides. So we pulled together a work group that contained representatives from the six divisions at CDC that address aspects of sexual health. They included HIV/AIDS, STD, viral hepatitis, adolescent and school health, and reproductive health, and violence prevention, which includes sexual violence. We came up with four criteria for the selection of indicators. First, we wanted to identify a concise set of indicators, like about 20, because we wanted something we could really communicate rather than having the whole kitchen sink. So we also wanted to focus on the general population for this point in time, so individual level indicators. And we wanted to identify indicators that would link policy and action when possible. Finally, we thought it would be useful if we could align with existing targets or goals, such as healthy people and the national prevention strategy when possible. So the first two criteria were firm for us, and then the latter two just helped us guide the selection of the best measures that were possible. Okay, so here's what we decided. We should have around 20 indicators, and so we thought we should probably figure out how many we wanted by objective of the draft objective of the Sexual Health Initiative. So we decided for the first objective we should have about 3 to 4 indicators, 6 to 7 for the second objective, and because objectives 2 and 4 are kind of CDC's bread and butter, we thought that we would have one indicator per division, and we would let the work group members go back to their division leadership and pick the indicators that were, you know, met their current goals to their satisfaction. But we did, for objective 2, want also one cross-cutting indicator, so we wanted to look more globally at sexual health services. For objective 3, we wanted 3 to 4 indicators, and I already addressed 4. So we were in our total range, 18 to 21. We were close to 20. So So what I will do is show you the indicators that we selected for each of the four draft objectives, and I will also show you the most recent data that's available for each one. And before I get to the indicators, I will first start, you know, we had a lot of issues that came up when we were meeting in the work group, and so I'll highlight some of those and let you know how we resolved them. Okay, so the draft objective one is to increase knowledge, communication, and respectful attitudes regarding sexual health. Some of the issues that the group dealt with included knowledge of sexual health is very, very, very broad. It would take numerous measures to have one indicator of knowledge of sexual health. And if you know anything about national surveys, there's very few have any measures about knowledge on them. So this was a problem for us. We also spent a great deal of time talking about respectful attitudes. We realize there's some difficulty in assessing that. It may be value-laden, and it could be interpreted differently by different observers. So some of our decisions were to use exposure to education in place of knowledge. We realize that is a major limitation, that just because you're exposed to something does not mean that you have learned. But that was a decision that we made. And we also decided to include attitudes that were important. We really wanted to focus on attitudes that could reduce the likelihood of discrimination. So this is the first four indicators for Objective 1. All four are from the National Survey of Family Growth, or the NSFG. The first three indicators are only applicable to male and female adolescents and young adults. And 1A and 1B are also healthy people goals. So for knowledge, we selected 1A, the percentage of youth that received formal sex education before they were 18 years old. The education had to cover all four topics that were included on the survey. And the topics were how to say no to sex, methods of birth control, STDs, and how to prevent HIV/AIDS. For communication, we had two measures. The first was parental communication. So we focused on the percentage of youth that talked with a parent or guardian about sexual health topics before they were 18. And they had to talk to the respondent about six topics. So it was the same four I just mentioned for objective one. And they also had to talk about where to get birth control and how to use a condom. The third measure was 1C. It's the percentage of youth that report it would not be embarrassing to discuss condom use with a new partner. This was the only partner communication measure that we could find. So. And finally, we had one respectful attitudes indicator. It's 1D. It's the percentage of individuals that believe sexual relations between two adults of the same sex are all right. This is for folks who are aged 15 to 44. And we really selected this given that stigma and homophobia may have a profound impact on the lives of LGBT, and especially their mental and sexual health. So this slide shows the data, the most recent data, for each indicator. For this set, all the data is from 2006-2008. And on the left is 1A, sex education. We saw that approximately two-thirds of females, so 64%, and just over half of males, 56%, reported receiving formal sex education with all four topics that I mentioned before they were age 18. The numbers were substantially lower for our parental communication indicator. Very few youth, it was only 19% of females and 13% of males, reported that they discussed the six key sexual health topics with a parent or guardian before they were 18 years old. 1C was our partner communication measure about condoms. 57% of females and 55% of male youth reported that they would not be embarrassed to discuss using a condom with a new sex partner. And finally, for attitudes, we found that half of females and 37% of males agreed that same-sex relations between adults was all right. Okay, so this is objective two, increase the use of evidence-based education and clinical and other preventive services that improve sexual health. So some of the issues that the group dealt with was evidence-based is kind of difficult to assess when you're talking about a survey question. And the best available data sometimes was not available at the individual level, which was like one of our main criteria for selection. So we had to be flexible. We decided that we would try to have divisions try to pick indicators that followed existing evidence-based recommendations so we could include evidence-based. And we decided that we had to use the best indicator regardless of level. So we actually have a couple of indicators that are not at the individual level. So we had two education indicators that were selected. They're from SHIPS, the School Health Policies and Programs Study. 2A is the percentage of schools teaching key sexual health topics in a required course. And B is percentage of schools teaching key violence prevention topics in a required course. And under the table, you can see there's some topics I put up there. There was literally like a three-page, you know, document that talks about all of the topics by level. So I could not show it to you, but all the topics that are on there differed by level of schooling, so whether elementary, middle, or high school. And so what we did was we took the questions on these key topics and we created a composite measure. So we'd have one indicator per school setting. And so the 2006 data for that was 45% of elementary schools and 31% of middle schools and 24% of high schools covered all of the key sexual health topics in a required course in 2006. For violence prevention, it was about a third of elementary and high schools, so 33 and 32% respectively, and 27% of middle schools taught all key developmentally appropriate topics in a course. Our remaining indicators for Objective 2 focused on clinical and other preventive services. And again, they were picked by the divisions to align with their priorities. 2C was our sort of overall measure of sexual health services, and it was the percentage of sexually active persons who received reproductive health services. It's also from NSFG, the National Survey of Family Growth. HIV selected percentage of people living with HIV who know their serostatus, and that's from their surveillance data. The STD indicator was the percentage of sexually active women enrolled in Medicaid or commercial plans who were screened for chlamydia, and that's a HEDIS measure. Viral hepatitis selected the percentage of high-risk adults who received hepatitis B vaccination, and that's from the National Health Interview Survey, and they had, I think it was 6 or 7 risk factors that they selected people for high risk. And finally, for pregnancy, we selected the percentage of pregnant women who receive early and adequate prenatal care. That's from the National Vital Statistics System, and it's the adequacy of prenatal care utilization measure. So it combines the number and timing of prenatal visits. It's also a healthy people objective. Okay, so this slide shows the most recent data for 2C, 2G, and 2D. In 2006-2008, 79% of women received a reproductive health service in the 12 months prior to interview, and 15% of men reported the same. For healthy pregnancies, we found that in 2007, 71% of pregnant women received early and adequate prenatal services. And finally, for 2D, in 2009, 18% of people 13 and older living with HIV knew their serostatus. The last few data points for Objective 2 are 2E and 2F. Our STD services was women screened for chlamydia. And we found in 2008, the percentage of eligible women screened was 53 to 59% for those who were in Medicaid and 40 to 44% for those who were enrolled in commercial plans. Finally, in terms of hepatitis B vaccination, in 2009, 51% of high-risk adults received one dose, and 41% received 3 doses of the vaccine. Okay, so for Objective 3, it looked at, draft Objective 3, looked at increased healthy, responsible, and respectful sexual behaviors and relationships. We did have a few issues when we were trying to select measures for this objective. We found that there were many value-laden judgments with sexual behaviors, and even in a work group of people who focus on sexual health at CDC, we had differences of opinion, so sometimes heated, sometimes not. But and we also found there's just an overall lack of data on healthy relationships or pretty much anything about relationships in the national surveys and surveillance systems. So we thought we would focus on behaviors that were associated with adverse outcomes, but placing the emphasis on increasing healthy, responsible behaviors. And we decided that relationships must be included, even though we lacked an indicator of relationships for the larger population, and the one we selected omits a substantial proportion of the general population. So these were the 4 indicators. There were 3 for sexual behaviors. They were all healthy people objectives, and they were from the NSFG. So the first was the percentage of adolescents who never had sexual intercourse before age 15. The second was the percentage of sexually active unmarried persons who use condoms. And the third was the percentage of women or their partners at risk for unintended pregnancy who use contraception. So it's only measured in females, but it was whether or not the female or her partner used contraception when she was at risk for pregnancy. And finally, we selected for relationships the percentage of people that report happiness with marriage, and that's on the general social survey. And we realize that the marriage rates have been declining. This omits a substantial proportion of the population, but this was the single only measure we found about relationships in our search. So here's the data for those four measures. You can see some mixed findings. For 3A, 8 and 10 adolescents reported never having sexual intercourse by age 15 years. For 3B, 35% of females and 55% of males used a condom the last time they had sex. And again, this includes only sexually active unmarried women and men 15 to 44 years. 3C, for women, 83% of their women or their partners at risk for unintended pregnancy did use contraception. And finally, in 2010, 62 to 64% of married people said they were very happy with their marriage. Okay, so finally, draft objective four looked at decreasing adverse health outcomes. You've probably seen most of these data before because it's sort of the standard CDC data. So we did talk about whether or not we wanted to include surveillance data because we know there are limitations to doing that. But we decided that we probably should have just include it and pick what was best to pick. We did have discussions about teen pregnancy versus teen birth. The pregnancy rates are reported several years later than birth rates, but the goal was to prevent unintended pregnancy, so we went back and forth, and we finally decided we needed to just sort of follow what existing guidelines suggested to us. And then for some divisions, it was very difficult to pick just one indicator. I'm in STD prevention. We have how many diseases, and we had to just pick one. So at the end of the day, we decided it was just we had to force people and just have them pick one. Okay, so here are all of the indicators for our adverse health outcomes. Our HIV indicator is top one, 4A, and they selected new incident HIV infections among adolescents and adults, and it's estimated from HIV surveillance data. For STD, we picked the rate of gonorrhea in women aged 16 to 24 years per 100,000 population, and that's from our surveillance data. Viral hepatitis selected 4C. It's new hepatitis infections in adults, and that is from their surveillance data. Then we had two indicators for pregnancies. 4D was the percentage of pregnancies that are unintended. It's calculated using multiple data sources, and Guttmacher is the one who publishes those data. And 4E, that we decided to go with pregnancy rates among adolescent females per 1,000, and that is a healthy people goal. Finally, 4F was the prevalence of sexual violence in the past 12 months, and this is violence that occurred by any perpetrator. And it's from a new survey, the National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey. So the data for these objectives, 4A, B, and C, in 2009, there were an estimated 48,100 new infections in adolescents and adults for HIV. At the same time, there were 9,000 estimated hepatitis B cases. And then for gonorrhea, although we selected age 16 to 24, we published our surveillance data from 15 to 24. So we didn't want to make anybody have to reanalyze it. So we used 15 to 24 for this presentation. And in 2010, you can see the rates were pretty high. 15 to 19-year-olds, it was 571 per 100,000. And for 20 to 24-year-olds, it was 561. Okay. Finally, these are the two – oh, no, actually, these, we have violence after this. So these are the two pregnancy indicators. In 2006, 49% of pregnancies were unintended. And the pregnancy rate in 2005 for adolescents was 70.6 per 1,000. And these are the last data here. The data on sexual violence in the past 12 months, or the 12 months prior to interview. So in 2010, 1.1% of females reported being raped in the last 12 months by any perpetrator. They did ask males the question, but the number was so small that the estimate was unstable, so they suppressed it. They looked at other forms of sexual violence, so in addition to rape, and they found that 5.6% of females and 5.3% of males experienced such violence in the past year. Okay, so we had many limitations to our study. There were many gaps in our set of indicators. The best measures were for traditional public health activities. So we had good measures of services and adverse outcomes, but everything else was a bit lacking. Well, not everything, but a lot of it was a bit lacking. We had no measures of communication with providers, communication with partners for adults, very few on attitudes related to sexual health, nothing on healthy relationships. And on the other side, it was really hard to narrow down the clinical services and the adverse outcomes. So you have a set that is not comprehensive. It was forced choice. And you probably noticed along the way, we have no data on adults over 45 years unless it was from a surveillance system, because the national surveys just don't go that high when you're talking about sexual behaviors and those things. There are also some issues with the indicators that we selected. As I mentioned, exposure to education definitely does not equal knowledge. And we had to go and use education measures at a different level, the school level. And we really wanted things that were collected annually or biannually, so we could frequently track them across time. But at the end of the day, some of them just couldn't be calculated that often. So it will limit some of our tracking. And then there are limitations with some of the surveillance data. But in conclusion, we did identify 21 indicators that highlight the current state of sexual health and will allow us to future track efforts. We were able to address most of the domains aligned with the four draft objectives. And we think that the indicators provide evidence of suboptimal sexual health and highlight the need for new approaches. For example, communication about sexual health with partners and parents was low, and attitudes demonstrated the potential for discrimination. And dissemination of important sexual health information in educational settings was quite low. So some of the considerations for addressing the gaps in our set of indicators include adding items to an existing survey or developing a new survey. And so I really want to thank Meg and John in particular, who spent probably as much time on this as I did, or maybe even more, I'm not sure. And then underneath them, the six other members of the work group who helped select the indicators. I think that's it. Yeah, thank you.